personal with me.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split podcast. Once again, I am Rob Calder, joined this week by the Victoria Country Men's Head Coach, Nathan Cooper-Brown. Welcome, Coops.
Great to see you guys.
Zoe Carr from the Country Women. Welcome back in.
Thank you for having me.
We've done the usual, hey, this is what time we're going to podcast. Then we've spoken for about 35 minutes before the podcast has started, and now we're starting to get into it. Coops has gone on a real, like, he's a bit itchy at the moment because we were just talking about Sunderland in particular. The new series is out on Netflix, and all of a sudden we just had the chatters be like, hey, how long do you think the manager's going to last? Checks it straight away, Twitter. Yeah, he's just been fired.
Yeah.
Like, he's on a bit of a spiral at the moment. So
classic Sunderland.
Exactly. By the time he gets off this podcast, there'll be two new managers and at least a new forward that they can be looking to deal with as well. So, as always, great to have everyone in on the podcast. If you're able to turn on the auto downloads on iTunes and Spotify, that would be fantastic, along with any ratings or reviews that you can leave, and sharing the podcast would be fantastic. You can follow along using the handle at Talking Split on Instagram and also on X. Apologies for the late upload for the Apple listeners last week. Brent goes on leave and all of a sudden all hell breaks loose and it doesn't work for some reason, but we managed to get there in the end. A couple of reminders before we jump into the pod itself. Coach shout-outs. So if there is anyone in that coaching sphere that you want to give a shout-out to, that you would like to give some acknowledgement or just a pat on the back to, send them in. Whether you want to send in an audio clip of it, which you can do obviously on the socials or via email, or whether you just want to send a text form in and I'll read that out. No issues either way, but it would be great to have some coaches out there just sort of shouting out some of the other coaches that are doing a lot of work in that space in particular. Book club, first segment this week. We're going to get into that at the end of the podcast, so stay tuned for that one. Zoe's already laughing because she knows she's on the clock for this one. Like we mentioned last week, if you have a book nomination, for lack of a better term, if you want to record yourself giving the review of the book, just obviously the name, the author, a little bit of a review as to why you liked it, what you took away from it, that would be fantastic. And we'll put it in the podcast for the other coaches to listen to as well. And hopefully we can flesh this thing out and it can be a fairly lengthy resource for coaches to go and tap into as well. Because I know there are plenty of readers out there, in particular the amount of coaches that do a lot of driving, audiobooks and those types of things too. That could be a really helpful thing for a lot of our coaches to go through. This week's topic came to us from one of our listeners of the pod, which is fantastic. So as a bit of a reminder, anyone that's in that space that is out listening and has a topic or anything like that that you really want to hear discussed, send them in. We're happy to go through these. So this is what I'm talking about, more the mental side of the game for players, and it's probably an area that we don't touch on a huge amount. I think we touch on it every week. I don't think we've really dived. Is that the right word? Dove into it. I'm not too sure. Either way, I don't think we've jumped into it. This reminds me, there was a bit of story time earlier.
Hey.
There was a fateful day that I was marking some stuff at a school for a teacher that didn't want to do it, and I just got thrown the work to do, which is teaching in general. No, I'm joking. I'm being very facetious there. They handed me the journal entries of what the kids had been doing, and they'd been on a kayaking trip the day before, and they had to write a little bit of a review of it. This is a high school, incidentally, so before you get to Rob's ragging on grade four kids, he's not. It was at a high school. And one of the kids wrote, you know, yesterday we went kayaking, and he tried to spell it and screwed it up, put the line through it, tried to spell it a second time, screwed it up, put the line through it, tried to go a third time, screwed it up, put the line through it, boating. We went boating yesterday, and this is what the day looked like. And it's like, you know what, credit to you, kid. You found a way in particular. So it is one of those things. We're going to jump into this one today in particular. So it is the mental side. We do talk a lot about, obviously, the skill sets and decision-making, which obviously ties into the mental side of things. But one of the questions that I think we get lost a little bit, that we forget that our players do have lives outside basketball and they have other things going on. I know when I was growing up as a kid, my preparation for my game started about 6 days before my game was actually on, because it's like, yes, I can't wait to play this team. This is what I need to do. I need to be organized for this, and this is how it will work. I'm not totally sure our kids are like that anymore. They've obviously got a lot of other things going on in their lives, and clearly I didn't. So it was a bit of a different space. But I suppose, Coops, how soon should players start preparing for a game in your eyes?
Well, I think before we jump into that question, Rob, I think an important part of this topic is to discuss what a lot of young people do, which is wrapping their identity up in what they do. And in this case, it's basketball. And so when we're talking about the mental side of the game, a lot of this stuff can kind of come back to that issue. So helping young people understand that they are not their basketball performance can really alleviate a lot of the negative things that come from this.
I'm smiling and laughing at the moment because we've all dealt with this fairly recently, I think, in a lot of cases. And it's something we'll certainly get into, is that pressure they put on themselves to be what social media would perceive them to be too. And that's a real danger. Like, we understand that by the time one picture gets posted, there's probably been 45 pictures with 16 different filters to get to that one picture. It's not real in that space. And I think your point is really valid, that in a lot of cases, our players get so hung up on, I have to be this type of a player because this is what I see my idols be, or this is what I see my peers be. It's just not real.
I think that is such a good point to start. Like, we could probably do a whole pod on that point alone. But I think also that expands to parents, of your child's performance, particularly skill-wise, technically, tactically, all that sort of stuff, is not a reflection of you as a parent.
Yeah.
You know, are they a good teammate? Are they respectful? Are they, you know, do they look after others? Are they showing gratitude? Yes, that shows what you are. That is a reflection of you as a parent. But the performance itself is not a reflection of you. And I think sometimes that's where a lot of conflict can start as well, between not only parent and player, but parent and coach or staff or anyone else that's around.
Yeah.
Well, let's face it, there aren't too many kids that play because they don't enjoy the sport. They play because they do enjoy the sport, whether it be the actual physical getting on court and playing, or whether it be the social connection to it. They play because they want to be there. So as coaches, we have to keep that in mind, and also relative to the level too. If you're a domestic coach, well, it is purely enjoyment. Realistically, you probably shouldn't be trying to win games at the domestic level. You should just be trying to improve them, make sure they're having fun, make sure they stay connected with the sport, types of things. As you get up higher, well, that's a different kettle of fish. Like, you can start to talk about that. And to be honest, that even really applies to the representative level for mine. Our competition is so big now, we'd be foolish to sit here and say that it is a high-performance environment, say the VJBL. There are elements of it, for sure. Our better kids absolutely play in it, no question, but not every week are you getting a great quality game in terms of it's going to be like a 2 or 3 point game. Like, there are some blowouts across the board. So even in that domestic scope and that lens, I think that still applies to our representative level for a lot of our kids too.
Yeah.
And, you know, once you get into maybe sort of state teams, Oz stuff, well, now we're starting to talk about the need to win and those types of things. But that's a different space for a lot of the coaches that we have out there. It probably doesn't really apply to them. So how can you make sure that your kids are engaged, they're fun, they don't have this identity crisis of, because I didn't score what I wanted to score this week, I mustn't be good. Anyone can throw a mixtape together.
Yeah, that's right. And now I think, you know, we can kind of circle back to that original question in, you know, having some self-awareness and having some really good understanding about what level you're playing. And you know, we're kind of talking to parents and coaches and athletes in terms of, you know, when does that preparation start? So, you know, we shouldn't be taking a whole day to prepare for a domestic game. You know, that just, it doesn't make sense to do that. You know, thinking about, okay, what's my level? How am I going to create the right optimal level of arousal and be able to go out there and initially have fun and be able to perform? So I think that's that starting base. Okay, so what am I preparing for? And that's going to determine it. So let's say, you know, because most of our listeners are probably thinking maybe Friday night basketball is probably what we're aiming for. So, you know, we shouldn't be sacrificing school time to prepare for a Friday night game. You know, there's
one. I beg to differ.
I would have loved that too. Yeah. In fact, I think I did.
Yeah, every player wants to sacrifice school time to go prepare for a game.
The reason I bring that up is because it's really talking about being present. You know, the best players have the ability to be where their feet are. And so if you're being distracted at school, then it's highly likely you're going to be distracted in a game. You know, we talk a lot. I was in Bendigo last night with our SDP athletes and gave them a big rev about, you know, we've got a real problem in the Country Vic men's program at the moment about thinking we can just flick the switch on and off. And our practice habits are poor, our off-court habits are poor, And, you know, and I say to the guys, oh, you know, what would happen if you were at an NPC or something like that? Oh, yeah, but then I would be like this. And it's like, no, that's not how this works, you know. And so if you can be present at school and understand how to kind of compartmentalize a little bit, okay, I'm at school, but then I'm at home, maybe I need to knock off a little bit of homework, I'm going to have my pregame meal, maybe I'll relax or have a nap, you know, those sorts of things. And then I can start, you know, going into more of that prep. And in saying that, we're also now coming back to what we originally spoke about, which is I'm not a basketball all the time. I'm being a student. I'm being a son. I'm being a brother, or, you know, whatever, a sister, whatever it may be. I'm being that person as I'm doing those things. And then when it's time for basketball, I can switch on to basketball and then, you know, just be more authentic, have better self-awareness, better identity, and then understand how to enjoy basketball when it's time for basketball.
I think a really important point there as well is if you're, let's say your game, you know, we play games on a Friday night at 9:40, but if you are preparing for that game at 9 a.m. and that's all you're thinking about and all you're focused on, by the time you get to 9:40, you're going to be exhausted.
That's right.
Like your arousal levels, you've got to time it. And everybody's different. There's no really set way, but definitely not that early. And making sure that, you know, you start – find what it is that it might be 1 hour before, it might be 2 hours before, it might be just on the car ride there. Like I know when I used to drive to games, I didn't speak. Like it wasn't on purpose, but it must have just on reflection, that was me getting ready for my game. That was starting because that was the start of the process. I had to get to the game once I was there, you know, all that. So that was for me, that's when that started. But everyone, like I said, everyone's different. But when you talk about preparation as well, preparation also comes from the practice floor. You know, if you are, if you've done what you need to do either at practice, outside of practice, you know, you're shooting on your own or you work on your own, you're lifting, your recovery, all those sort of things, you're probably not going to need as long to prepare for the game because your confidence is going to be sky high. And we've talked about it before on the pod. Like confidence doesn't come from someone telling you you're good. It makes you feel good, gives you a bit of a hit of dopamine and makes you feel like, oh, isn't that nice, a bit warm fuzzy. But that's not – when it comes down to it, when the ball's kicked to you and you need to hit a shot to win the game, it's not the words of that person telling you you're good that makes that shot, makes you feel confident enough to shoot it and knock it down. It is the work that you've put in leading up to that. So there's sort of, from a mental perspective, the physical aspect can also lead into that as well.
Yeah. Yep. It's a tweet that I saw actually last night was you were talking. I wasn't trying to ignore you. I was just trying to find my phone.
I'm used to you looking at your phone while I'm speaking.
Apologies. It was a tweet last night from Kevin Mulcahy, who's a great coach educator over in Ireland that does a lot of work. And he was talking about dopamine is not the pursuit of happiness. It's about the happiness of the pursuit. And it's that kind of thing where you talk about it. So the ability, and both of you have sort of mentioned on it, the ability to flick a switch. If you are used to having to do like an S&C session or a training session or whatever the case may be during the week, you know that you can't be high the whole time. You know there are times where you're going to need to bottom out a little bit and you're going to need to get motivated really quickly for a short amount of time. It's like, hey, I have to get this lift in really quickly. I can't be thinking about this for 4 hours beforehand because I'm just going to be fatigued by the time I get there in the first place. So it is trying to find that balance, I think, for a lot of kids too. And I can speak to it from a coaching end. I know I was far more invested in coaching when I had a 7 p.m. game. But when I had the 9:40 p.m. game, because I'd had time to come home from work, relax for a little bit, and I found it really hard. But once I start to wind down, I find it really hard to wind back up again. So the 7 p.m. game was great for me because it was like I'm going there straight from work. I'm already in that headspace anyway. I'm good to go. Whereas 9:40 was just like, oh man, 9:40. Like I've got to go. Where do I have to get there for 9:40? How far is that one going to be? Do I need to deal with traffic? Do I have to go across the bridge?
When do I eat?
Yeah.
Like, well, you know, all that stuff. But,
I mean, as you know, I'd never eat before games.
Yeah.
So now that impact on the other end of it as well. And that's something we've got to take into consideration with their kids too, is like, well, what time is their game? Will they be able to get food in beforehand? Yep. They should, absolutely. What's food going to look like afterwards? That's important too.
The phone too. You know, we brought up the phone, and what a lot of these young people don't understand is there is mental energy spent flicking through your phone. And so the more time you're on your phone prior to a game, the more mental bandwidth and mental energy you are expending. And so we speak a lot about it with our, like, our state kids, and we say when we have rest time, we say no screens. We want lights off, feet up. You know, we really want to take a lot of the sensory stuff away and really help them just relax and best, recover and recuperate before what's next.
It's funny you say that, because I was at a game on Friday night and was sitting behind a couple of parents that sort of didn't really know that I was sitting there or anything like that. And they were talking about, we just drove an hour 20 for this game and I wouldn't have even known my daughter was in the back seat. Like, she was there, but we didn't say a word to each other. There were, and it's not so much the whole, you know, Zoe checking out and I don't want to talk to people, but it was screen time.
Yeah.
They were just on their phone the entire time. They walk into the stadium, they hug their teammates, they go and sit down next to each other on the phone. It's like, I don't even know if you two are texting each other at this point. Yeah. Like, but it's that kind of thing. It's like, well, when do you tune out to that? And I'm eternally grateful. I grew up in an era where mobile phones weren't really a thing, so it was a lot easier in that space. But I also don't really know the answer as to how to take away that, you know, that distraction. And it is. It's a distraction more than anything else for mine. It's and like when we sort of talk about how do they prepare, I know I was a little bit OCD-ish in this sort of space, but I grew up playing cricket, was probably my more preferred of the two sports. So I was really conscious of what's my bag look like? Is everything where it's supposed to be? My pads have to be there. My gloves have to be there. My helmet has to be in that. My bat has to be there. Like, it was almost distracting because that actually took mental energy away from me, where I'm sitting there, mate, why is that not where it's supposed to be, where it's supposed to be, those types of things. But a lot of players would go through something fairly similar on a Friday night of making sure, have you got everything? How many times have you been to a game where it's like, oh, I forgot my shoes?
Well, routine's really important. Yeah. It's really important for preparation, and it's actually encouraged as long as it is something you can manage and you can control. So when you have, whenever I hear of an athlete say, oh, I've got to get, you know, 30 shots up from this spot before I can play, well, that's not always going to be doable for you. So when you can't do that, now that's going to, whether you know it or not, it could be subconsciously seep in to your mindset and your mental preparation. So, like, my ankles were horrific. I could not play basketball without taping my ankles. So my routine was always tape right ankle, right sock, right shoe, tape left ankle, left sock, left shoe. And then when my left foot hit the ground, that was it. Game time. Like, let's go. But I could control that because I genuinely couldn't play without my ankles taped. So if I forgot my tape, I can't play anyway. But it's having that control and those, you know, again, I hear, you know, I've got to listen to this song or I've got to have, again, like, what if your phone's flat because you've been on it all day, like we've just spoken about, or, you know, all those sort of things. What if there's traffic and you rock in 2 minutes into the first quarter and you get no warm-up, you know, all those sort of things. So anything controllable, I think, is highly encouraged to get you into that routine and get you ready to go mentally.
Yeah, and we all have those habits. Like, I used to listen to the Detroit Pistons intro before games because I used to find it fun. Like, it was just, you know.
You would be a Detroit man.
What are you suggesting?
You like Fords.
I like Fords. Slim Shady. I do love my mum's spaghetti. Like, it's those types of things. But it is one of those things. It was just a, you know, it was almost like, okay, it's game time now. Like, I'd hear that and it's like, okay, shelve all the other stuff. This has now put me in a place where I want to go and do basketball stuff. So that was kind of my routine, I suppose.
Story time, Rob.
Ooh.
Before I got to college, I was so wrapped up in what we would call basketball culture, you know, hip hop and all this sort of stuff. And it was all rah, rah, rah. And
he had the long shorts that went down to like mid shin.
Oh, yeah.
Culottes, I think.
Had a matching Sean John tracksuit. We may have to edit that out. But
but if you'd like to sponsor us.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when I got over there, even my first year, I think it was, I was still doing that. And because the level of intensity was up, I'd do all this rah-rah. And by the time I hit the floor, I was so gassed. I was so tired. Like, it was just ridiculous. And I hadn't spent enough time developing self-awareness and trying to understand what was best for me and my preparation. And young athletes need to do that. They need to tinker a little bit. Don't need to do it necessarily on game day, like, you know, because that's an important day for you guys, which we understand. But, you know, pre-practice and some different things, you got to start trying to find what's best for you. And I started listening to much more calming music. I loved my NXS, so I moved to NXS in the bus ride. Yeah,
I swear he was going to say Enya then or something like that.
And then I started meditating in the locker room. And so I would wait till the absolute last point before I had to leave the locker room, and I would meditate to that point. I'd bring my heart rate down, I'd bring my breathing down. And then when I got into the actual warm-up on the court, I would go at about 50%. So I was sharp, but I wasn't really exerting myself. And then when I hit the floor, I felt just energized. I felt prepared. I felt like I had something in the tank, and it really helped me. And so highly recommend that to our young athletes, to keep trying to find the way, like Zoe spoke about earlier, what's best for you, because everybody's an individual.
I think trying to get into that sort of, like you spoke about it before, Rob, with, you know, switch on, switch off, all that sort of stuff. And you look at it from a, let's look at another sport, and let's look at cricket and a wicket keeper, for example, in a test. They're on, when you say on, they are in the field and they are constant. Like bowlers get turned over, they get a bit of a rest there, or that they are, every ball must be at an extreme high concentration level. So they have to learn how to, between balls, which is not really that long, how to switch off and then switch back on. And it's sort of, it's a long walk, but stay with me here. If we put that into basketball terms and we talk about how poor free throw shooting is at the moment and how often, you know, like having the ability to be able to, as Coop said, lower your heart rate, bring yourself back to your feet, all those sort of things, and then be able to focus on that wide open, easy, probably easiest shot you'll get in the game. Will we see higher results? I don't know. But I just think having that, I guess, ability to do that, you know, in a routine, from a pre-game perspective, I think it can only help.
Well, it comes down to coaches too. So think about this and ask your players what they want their pre-game to look like. Because if you're a coach, and I saw it just recently, a coach, I think it was 12 minutes to go in the game, so just before three-quarter time in a VJPL game, started talking to their players. It went for those 2 minutes. It went for the three-quarter time break, and it went for the 10 minutes of that quarter. That's a lot of talking to do for your players before a game. If they've done any warm-up, they're about to lose any movement side of things. Concentration, you probably lost them 25 to 30 seconds in anyway. That's a lot. So maybe check in with your players. Like, well, what do you want your warm-up to look like? What do you need to get through so that you'll feel okay? When do you want me to talk? And I'm not a massive talker before the games anyway. I was usually a, hey, three-minute mark, this is... We'll come in, we'll talk about that, go do your warm-ups. 20 seconds before we need to be on the court, we'll just hit on 1, 2, and 3, back out.
Well, and there might be some kids that say, I want to go sit by myself and try and, you know, just center and all that sort of stuff. And you need to know that. You also need to know what their triggers are, because some of them look different and sometimes they can look a bit disrespectful. So when I was really nervous or even just excited or pumped, like if I had that sort of energy about me, I'd yawn. And so I'm sitting in a change room, a coach is talking, and here I am yawning. That looks horribly disrespectful. Now, as an adult, I was able to go to the coaches and say, hey, this is what I do. I'm aware that I do this. This isn't a, I'm not listening, I'm bored or whatever. This is a way of getting some nervous energy out, just so you're aware. But as a junior, that wasn't taken overly well and it took me a while to figure out why I was doing that. But then because I didn't want to get told off or yelled at or look disrespectful, I'm standing there and as we all know, as we've all tried to hold a yawn in before, and given I've said yawn so many times, probably people are listening about to yawn, but you keep your mouth closed, your eyes start to water and you just, it is horrible.
Your bottom jaw sort of quivers a little bit. It's just, don't do it.
But what I'm also not doing is listening. because I'm focusing on trying so hard not to look disrespectful and not to do that, I have no idea what they've just said. So now I've got to try and play catch up and go to other places and say, well, what did they say? And, you know, all that sort of stuff, which then again is putting me in a state of frenzy rather than calm and ready to play. So, you know, understanding your athletes and how different types of either pressure or nervousness or whatever it is, how that triggers them and things that they may show outwardly is really important as coaches, because then you can, you know, like I had a coach who was like, yawn away, and it wasn't a problem. But, yeah, it's different for everybody, and understanding that can also really help your relationship with the athlete too, because I know that coach, I loved him because he just let me be me, and I probably played my best season. So, you know, it's that sort of stuff that I think is really important that sometimes we overlook because we're so busy with the technical and the tactical.
One off the cuff then, because we haven't discussed this. As a coach, how do you let 10 players be 10 players without some form of uniformity having to come into, hey, I need the, I know you're all unique individuals, but I need this. Like, how do you get to that point then?
Boundaries.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yep. So you got to be, again, it comes back to the relationship building, it comes back to the connectedness, and it comes back to the honesty around saying, hey, this is your time to go and do whatever you need, and we support you to be authentic and be an individual and prepare the way you need to. But at the end of the day, we are a team, and there's certain things that need to be done in a team way, like you're saying, in uniformity. And so, you know, this is how we budget the time, and then you keep you know, making that dialogue organic, and you make potentially, like, if you can make the amount of time organic. So, you know, maybe one game, hey, you know, I didn't get enough time individually, or I didn't get enough time as a team, and you keep working it to kind of find the best of both worlds. But it just always comes back to that that connectedness and that honesty.
Yeah, and I think as a, you know, in your preseason, when you start setting your standards and your expectations and behaviours, that's where it really comes in as well. So, hey, this is what we need as a team. Now, how do you function the way you need to function within that? So it's not a case of you get to just go off and – we're not saying, you know, if a kid says, oh, I need to sit in the car until the game starts, well, that's obviously not going to work. But, you know, how do we work that around? Because there is also a part of – athlete development that they also need to, I guess, learn how to be a part of a team. And sometimes you can't get everything you want when you want. And there is a little bit of, through lack of a better word, it sounds quite harsh, but they have to conform a little bit at times and sacrifice some things for the greater good of the group. So it's important for their development as well to understand that they have to be who you are and what you need to be, but as Coop said, within those boundaries.
It's funny, I was on a – when I say I was on a team, I was involved with a team once that had two players in it that both had to make the last shot before they'd come into the huddle. It's like, you do realise that this doesn't work, guys. Like, it's – one of you two needs to cave a little bit on this one and just sort of maybe say, hey, this isn't the most important thing for me.
You have this week, I'll have next.
Yeah, exactly. I'll take the first half, you take the second half, those types of things. But I understand everyone will have their own little rituals and those types of things, and, you know, someone will have the lucky pair of socks that they love to wear and all those types of things. Those things, they don't really matter too much, but yeah, when it starts to impact on team performance, that's when you're probably going to need to intervene as a coach and just sort of say, hey, look, can we really talk about this? I know we've been at Nationals before where you watch a team warm up and it looks like they have spent maybe 3 weeks on their warm up and designing what it's going to potentially look like, and we're going to run in this crisscross fashion and we're not going to run into each other. And it's like, yeah, but that would stress me out before a game. Like, I'd be more worried about, geez, am I going to clip the toe of the heel of the person on the way through?
I'd have to go last.
Yeah, just be too much for me. So it is. I mean, what are you really warming up for? Is to be ready to play your game. So if you're stressed during your warm up, that's going to cause problems, I think, for your team straight away. So trying to find a way to just keep them calm, keep them fairly relaxed. It's hard at times when you walk past two players like a minute and a half before the game, and they are talking about something that is just not even remotely connected to the basketball game. It's like, geez, I've been worried about this game for like 3 weeks. It's been circled on the calendar, and you two are talking about, oh, you know, where are we going after this and what's going to happen next? It happens.
But also, that it's important that you note that down, because if that particular athlete is, you know, there's 30 seconds to go and they're talking about what they're going to do tomorrow or that they're going to see Taylor Swift or whatever, note that down and then check their performance. And if they the first, whether they start or come off the bench, whatever it is, but if they start slow or sort of mentally checked out, then you can have that conversation of, hey, how do you think you prepared for that game? Do you think mentally you were in the right headspace to, you know, to perform? And start working on those strategies that we've spoken about. They might need to sit by themselves because if they're around other people, they'll be distracted and talk or have those, you know, those sort of things. They might need to sit with a particular athlete because they'll talk about the game because that's what they need as well or whatever it might be. But note that stuff down, and if you've got an assistant coach, have them like remind you, because obviously once the game starts, you're not going to be thinking about that. But yeah, and then have those conversations, and you can like sort of guide them on their way to getting their routine and getting themselves into how they need to be to mentally prepare for games.
It's funny though, the amount of different things that go through our players' heads in particular. I know we walked into a gym once and one of our players tightened up visibly straight away, and it's like, hey, what's up? Like, just a normal gym, there's nothing spectacular. It's like, I did my ACL here 2 years ago. And it's not a real nice memory to know that I was screaming on the floor just on that wing over there. That's where it all went down. So immediately, and had a terrible game. Like, and I got the impression it was consistently front of mind for them and they just couldn't get past it. And to be fair, it's not something I thought about at the time. I just thought about, hey, get over it. It's a court, you know, 94 feet, two rings, we'll manage. But it is a really big thing for a lot of players that, and it goes the other way too. I had 40 on this court. I like this court a lot. You know, these are good rings. And it's like, they're the same rings on every other court. Like, just relax. But, you know, that plays into a player's narrative a lot of times. And it's amazing how many times they can write a story before anything has ever happened. And I'm not going to touch on the anxiety side of things too much because I'm frankly uneducated enough to not delve into that too much. But it's amazing how many players get super anxious before a game. And you've just got to try and bring them back by just talking them through it, grounding them back to what they need, rather than stressing about it.
Well, and it's when you talk about courts and environments, a few years ago when the coaches conference was in Ballarat and David Stiff did a presentation on, you know, the psychology of basketball and mindset. And one of the things he spoke about, which I found so interesting, was that exact thing and how it links back into our fight or flight. So we've had a bad game here. Whenever we enter any environment, we don't know that this is happening, but our brains automatically scan for danger, and it doesn't realize that us having had a bad game there isn't dangerous, but it puts us into flight mode because danger, get the hell out of there, and that's what can it's more than just I've had a bad game, like it's deep seated. Psychologically into our brains as who we are as people, and being able to work around that is more than just somebody saying, oh no, you'll be right. Like it takes far more than that. And again, if you've got a routine, if you've got something that mentally prepares you and gets you ready to go, and you go through that step by step, that's step one, because it's, hey, you did this exact routine last week. And you had a, you know, and we talk about you had 30 or whatever. That's not really just the mark of a good game, but you played well last week after this routine. So this is what's going to help get you ready. It's not about the court. It's about your routine and what you're doing. And eventually it can help sort of start to bring them around to the point where they now start to fight rather than flight.
Yeah, just to scaffold on that, because that's – such a brilliant point. And then the next part is the goal setting piece. And when we're talking about anxiety, and I was reading an Epictetus quote this morning. I'm not going to do it word for word because I'll butcher it. But basically it said, you know, show me the anxious man and I'll show you someone who pines for something outside of their control. And if you look at majority of young people as they're preparing for basketball games, it's all outcome driven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all outcome based goals. Yep. I want to score 20 points tonight. I want to get 10 rebounds. I want to get a triple double, whatever it may be. And all of that is outside of their control. So if all they've thought about from 5 p.m. up to a 9:40 tip off is getting a triple double and they finish with 0 points, 2 rebounds, and 1 assist, well, you can bet how they're going to feel after the game and how that car ride's going to be.
The office for me, Coop.
Yeah.
You should be pretty happy with that, in all honesty.
Because it means you got minutes.
Yeah, exactly right. Not something I experience regularly, as it turns out. But it's a really good point. And I mean, I'm listening to you both talk about routine and how it applies to the foul line. That is a big thing that I see a lot of players go through. And I look at some of the routines that sit at the foul line, and it's like, my God, like this is going to actually take up some mental space in your head to be able to go through all of this by the time they, you know, kiss the ring like Jason Kidd used to do and all that sort of stuff, and then go through a little handle routine and all that sort of stuff. It's just too much for mine. Simple is better.
And again, it's got to be controllable. Like, yeah. I know we're talking mentally here, but like when we talk about free throws, you know, if you spin the ball to yourself, you're never going to do that the exact same way twice in a row. So it's not the same. It's got to be something that is controllable, something simple, and obviously looking at the rim helps. But again, it's that routine. And if your routine is flawed, your outcome will be flawed.
Yeah. Yep. What was your routine, sorry, from the foul line, instead of curiosity?
I set my feet and then I took 2 dribbles, just checking my feet didn't move, and then 2 dribbles looking at the rim, and then I shot it.
Yep. What were you, Coops?
I'll give you the one I changed to because that was way more effective. So I'd set my right foot on the shooting line, which is the split line, would find my target, take a deep breath, 1 bounce, shoot.
Yep. Why the dribble? Just out of curiosity for both of you.
Feel the ball release off my fingers.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, and I think for mine it was also a chance to have that breathing as well. Like if I just got it and shot it. And I also wasn't a great jump shooter. So that giving myself, making that, stepping that, separating that from what would be just a catch and shoot jump shot to something different.
Yeah, okay. And the reason I ask is obviously I see a lot of people shoot free throws and the routines they go through. But also what the coaches are telling their players to go through. I'm a big advocate for simple is better the point where I would almost take the dribble out. I understand why you're putting it in there, but I've also seen plenty of kids bounce it off their foot at the foul line. It's like, oh, this is not going to go well, regardless.
Kathleen McLeod's a great example. She used to dribble and not never made free throws, but was a poor free throw shooter.
Yep.
Took the dribble out and it just went through the roof. Yeah, she was a great jump shooter as well.
Yep.
So her thing was just like, well, why would I change it? I'll just catch and shoot rather than, you know, turn it into something else. So it's just going over and over the same things, but your routine is so important and it's what works for you.
That's the key right there for me, is coming back to what works for you. And you don't know what works for you unless you're going to spend time in developing self-awareness and evaluating yourself and writing some things down. So I had a good game. What did I do? What did I eat? What was I thinking? What was I listening to? How did it relate? What was the timing like? You've got to give yourself the best chance to create the optimal preparation. If you're just kind of, you know, throwing stuff against the wall, then how do you know? So if you're really serious about it, then, you know, you're serious about your game and your performance, then get serious about your preparation and go into that, those self-awareness exercises.
Yep, and the consistency matters. Like I'm really big on players exhaling before they shoot. That's a big thing for me. And I stole that from archery, in all honesty, that they noticed that in an Olympics or a World Cup or whatever it was, the archers that held their breath before they would fire the arrow had that ability to breathe at the same time, which can sometimes skew where they're aiming. So I was really big on exhale before you release the ball, and that became part of a routine. But I was also a don't dribble it. Like I would spin it to myself almost and then shoot it.
Spin.
But again,
I'm kidding.
Not a very good basketballer. Like it's
the traps too. So yeah. your trapezius that you know links your shoulders to your neck, like that muscle. Like if you're tied up there and you're bringing that your shoulders up to your neck, that's where you're going to miss free throws. And you watch some of the best free throw shooters like Steph Curry, big deep breath, drops and relaxes his traps. Kevin Durant when he's at the free throw line does that little shimmy, relaxing his trap. So doing that exact thing that you're talking about, like breathing, relaxing, especially not being tense in vital areas like that, is only going to help you.
Well, and really, really important if you're in a free throw situation that you must make. Like it is game winning or game losing if you don't make it. Really important. You've got I don't like, I've done it a couple of times already. I don't like talking about when I played, but I remember playing Townsville in a semi in the WNBL, got fouled, went to the foul line. If I made it, it sealed the game. If I missed it, they had an opportunity to win it. And I had actually visualized a lot of this, a lot of what would happen if, how would I react? And I used to watch a lot of games and see how other people reacted, and I could always tell when someone was about to miss their free throw. Similar with tennis, when you watch tennis, you can always tell when someone's about to on their serve either fault or hit the net. And I know it annoys you because I always go, "Oh, they're about to fault," and then they do it, and he's like, "Jesus!"
It's not that one annoys me. It's like I knew they'd do that afterwards. It's like, call it beforehand.
Because you see a slight difference in their routine. You see, like they might bounce it and it sort of bounces off a little bit and then they've got to bring it back and you see that slight difference in it and it all matters. But the amount of people I also saw in those situations who would get that foul and the first thing they would do would be, like you said, Coops, tense right up and not want to be there. And I was like, well, if this situation happens to me, I'm going to love being there. I know my routine works. I know I can shoot free throws. I'm going to want to be there. So that happened. And it was almost like I'd willed it into existence, like, because I'd been thinking about it so much. Made the first one. And then there was a break. There was something wrong with the clock. And so we're standing there for another, what felt like 20 minutes, but it was probably only like 1 minute or 2 minutes. But that entire time, that I could feel like, oh God, the thoughts of, oh God, can they hurry up? And then it was like, no, push that out. You're fine. You're standing here. You're fine. You know this. You're going to do this. You're going to make this. And, all that sort of positive self-talk for myself kept myself calm and then was able to nail the second. And I think if it had, those free throws had absolutely nothing to do with my technical skill, nothing, and everything to do with what was going on in my head at the time. And previous to that, I think visualization's really important, and putting yourself in, visualizing yourself in different scenarios and, making those free throws or making the three to win the game or grabbing the rebound or defending to, get the stop that your team needs, all that sort of stuff, I think is really important because I felt like I'd been there 20 times.
Rob, the word that really stuck out to me then when hearing that was love and the power of that word. I love being at the free throw line. I love a pressure situation. Even importantly, in preparation, I love the game of basketball. Mm. I love that I get to do this tonight. I love my teammates. I love my coach. You know what I mean? Like there's so much power in that word that can really just completely shift the mind to where and what it's about to do rather than, oh, man, I hope I score 20 points tonight or I hope I make this free throw, those sorts of things. So the power of that self-talk and to really buy into the power of the word love, I think is really vital for our young athletes.
It's amazing how it changes throughout the age groups too. Like you remember that as a senior basketball, where there's a lot of pressure on it. Under 12s have no thought what is going on in their head whatsoever when they're standing at the foul line. It's almost the other way because I know I've done it with players in the past where similar type of situation, something's gone wrong with the clock, big free throws on the line, just bring the player over and say, hey, what's going on? Like, you don't talk to them about the free throw itself. You talk to them about anything else. But so when they go back there, they're a little bit more relaxed. And remember, a bit of a story time again. One of going way back when I was coaching under 12s, I used to have my little under 12 life tweets that would sort of come through for a little while there. And a player missed free throws near on after the siren, which lost us the game. And my first thing is I got to go to him, like, after the game, make sure he's okay. And it's like, hey, mate, how you going? Like, is it, you know, you feel okay? And he's like, yeah, I'm about to go and buy a fish. It's like,
love kids.
Cool.
That's so great.
Good to see this hasn't impacted on your world whatsoever, and we moved them straight along. So it's a real interesting part that, like, under 12 kids, they probably don't realise anything that's going on in that world, whereas obviously as you start to get older, there's a little bit more pressure. Mm. It's all the other anxieties that come into it that actually do play a massive part in that. I've just seen how long we've been going for and how many questions I still have that we haven't got to. So this will absolutely be a part two for there's a reasonable chance Bestie and Jenna will get your offcuts next week as a part of their podcast. But one of the questions I do have, dealing with complacency, you're the better team. Actually, I'll go back a step because I had a question before for both of you that I've forgotten about. How do you find the line between routine and superstition? Because not everyone's the same way. I think there's a lot of people that get a little bit, I have to do this because this will mean I win. As a bit of an example, when Zoe and I were coaching together, it was part of the superstition, and I've put air quotes up, that I've just realised mean nothing to anyone on a podcast, that we had
we heard it in your voice, it's fine.
That we had to have charcoal chicken before the game on a Saturday.
That's what I'd have you believe.
Yeah. And I had to go and get it because the week that I went and got it, we won.
You won, yeah.
So... she knows.
Yeah.
How do you find the line between superstition and routine?
To me, routine's controllable, superstition's not.
Yeah. Like, it's simple as that, yep.
Yeah. But it's, you know, I can't say that I'm brilliant at this because when we were at Wyndham Nationals a few years ago for the 18s and I had to try and park in the same sort of spot, like... I'm still bound by this stupid stuff.
I'll just do that because I can never find my car. If I try and get to the same car park as I've come out, I'm gone.
I'm not completely immune to it is what I'm saying. But I think, anything you can control can become a part of your routine.
Yep.
Superstition then becomes, I think, problematic because when someone parked in my park, then I wasn't too happy.
Coops, any different?
Yeah, I mean, superstition... for me is identifying that you're not as prepared as you think you are.
Yep.
And now you're looking for other things outside of your control to help you get the results that you're looking for.
Yeah,
like so that. If you can come back to your prep, come back to the work you're doing, come back to routine, that things that, you know, that are in your control and that are more process driven, that's only going to be beneficial. And I didn't realize that for a very long time. Like I've been highly superstitious for a long time. And so, it was good to kind of come to that realization.
Yep, that makes sense. All right, complacency. How are we dealing with complacency? We've all been that team that you walk in and go, yep, we've got this one tonight. We can circle this one as a win. And then all of a sudden it's three-quarter time. It's like, how come we're only up by 1 point here and this is a game against a team we know we should be beating? Coops, how are you dealing with that?
Yeah, straight away we're talking about outcomes again.
Yep.
Yeah, we're talking about, okay, let's just get through this team. They're bottom of the ladder. We've got the top, you know, second of the ladder next week. You know, we know we can get this done. As soon as you start talking about those sorts of narratives and are connecting them to outcomes, you're in trouble. But if you are a process-driven team that focuses on doing the things that are based around the strengths of the group and areas you know that you need to be proficient in to get results, then you can kind of take away any power an opponent has. And whether that's the complacency or a tough matchup, whatever it may be. You know, I know it's a little bit cliche, you know, you kind of treat everybody the same way, but if you can at least get the core work done around, those processes and you taking care of things you know you have to take care of, you're immediately in a better position.
Yep. What about you, Zoe?
Yeah, it's about your standards. So your standards remain the same whether you're playing the team on the top of the ladder or you're playing the bottom place team. And I think that's something we've got to do a better job as a collective, a coaching collective, is to get athletes into that mindset that it's not, again, about outcome, it's about standards. Did we meet our standards today? Or are we currently meeting our standards? And that then is, it is still outcome based because you might have it as, you know, X amount of turnovers per quarter or X amount of kills or whatever it might be. You might, so it still might have that, but it's not about points on the board or how much you're up by or how much you're down by or those sort of things. Because there is also, you know, beware the underdog, you know. So you come into those games, they've got nothing to lose and they get to throw everything at you. That's also difficult to deal with as well. But if you stay standards or, as Coop said, process-driven, then you go a long way into making sure that you're, you know, you're doing what you need to do. I think as you get older as well, you can have frank conversations with, say, starters and say, hey, you've got to do your job because this is an opportunity for us to get pay some rent to some kids that come to practice all the time, don't really play much, all that sort of stuff. If you don't do your job, then they won't get an opportunity. And so you're linking it into a care. And I know for women in particular, I can't really speak for men because I haven't coached men yet, but for women, that really hits something. They really want to see those athletes try and play. Like you see, we watch the WNBL and DPs check in and they score and the bench goes mental and, you know, all that sort of stuff. They want to see them do well. But I wouldn't be doing that in juniors. Definitely don't do that in juniors. But in your senior basketball, you know, you can have those frank conversations.
Yeah, and you both sort of hit on it as well, but a part of it is the coach process too. If your routine every week is, look, we show film on this night and this is how we're doing this, this is what the walkthrough is going to look like, this is how our practice looks like, then you come in the next week and it's like, hey, we're playing the bottom two team. You know, we won't worry about this week. We sort of feel like we need a down week. Well, you're going to see that on the floor. Mm. That's a really big thing that I found over the years too. So you got to make sure that you don't check out as well, because there's a lot of times where the coach, the tone isn't quite the same, the edge isn't quite the same, the prep isn't quite the same. Yeah. And that players pick up on that pretty quickly. The players aren't stupid.
And it's one of the things you need to be careful of when you're putting your scout template together, if you're in the older sort of age groups, is if you go into massive amounts of detail when you're playing those top teams or the better teams, it's going to be really difficult to find the same amount of detail for the bottom place team. So keeping that simple and keeping it to the point is then it can be consistent throughout the year, and like hitting on your point then of then everything remains the same rather than, oh, I get like a 15 page for this team but this one's only half a page, you know, and then it starts to play into mindset.
Yeah. I was talking to the boys in Bendigo last night about, you know, The Last Dance. And again, not to get too cliche, but Michael Jordan was Michael Jordan for a reason. And we said to the, you know, what was this guy like? You know, and one of the boys said he was a killer. I said, yeah, great. I said, the perfect, you know, description. And then it was like, what was he like, you know, when he was playing cards with his teammates on the plane? He was a killer. What was he like when he was playing golf? He was a killer. You know what I mean? Like, there was no off switch. There was an understanding. Didn't matter who he was playing, he understood what it meant to be his authentic self, be his most competitive self, be true to him and play as hard as he could every single time he was on the floor. And that should be discussed as an individual and as a team, that we don't break those standards that Zoe's talking about.
And what a cracking segue, because
that was the, yeah.
What's that?
That was the drop at the start.
It was the drop at the start. Yeah. Not what I was talking about. But I like, if nothing else, I love the unwavering support. More to the point, you can hear a lot of or read a lot about Jordan and Kobe in particular in the Tim Grover books. Like Relentless is fantastic. I think Winning Time might have been the other one or something along those lines. I'll have a little bit of a look for it. But we are about to get into our first book club segment.
Leather-bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
Zoe, welcome to the meeting room for library that we have at the State Basketball Centre. You're on for book club this week.
Well, are you all right, Coops? I've said before on the pod, I thought having heard that before would have helped me in this situation, but no, it hasn't. I've said before, I'm not a great reader.
Surrounded by idiots, didn't get through it?
No, my plan was to read it on tour on the plane, yeah. and but that
anxiety was too high.
just did not happen.
Read the title, agreed with it, and put it down.
Exactly. That's exactly it. No, so I took a slightly different approach. I know everyone's probably listening, wanting you know, things that are going to help them with their coaching or things like that. But I, one of the things in sorting this was I learned that I really need to be motivated to get anything done. And so reading
– Sometimes internal motivation, sometimes external motivation.
So I really wanted to have a book. So I read the Complete Australian Barbecue Kettle Cookbook from front to back. I did skip the seafood section because I don't eat seafood. But the reason I'm sharing this is because I really enjoy barbecuing and cooking and things like that. And it's actually become a really large sort of hobby, I guess. And one of the things it's really teaching me is something I really need, which is I am process driven. Like I look at it and I want to know how long, at what temperature, and then what do I do next, and A to B to C to D. And there's so much grey in, well, as anyone would probably know, in cooking, but particularly in cooking barbecues, because weather affects things, wind affects things, all that sort of stuff. So it's teaching me to stay calm, find solutions, and that it's okay if it doesn't work. Like, you know, and it's all things that I'm really enjoying sort of that process. Like I obviously enjoy eating. Anyone that's seen me knows portion control is a problem, but I love the outcome. And I also love putting things on for other people too. So, you know, obviously Rob and I both enjoy what we cook up, but then it's, you know, out to the brothers and sisters and mums and dads and all that sort of stuff too. So it's a lot of fun. And but reading that, because it was something I am really enjoying and I'm really getting into, and it's taking me away from basketball a little bit, which is good, because it was getting to a point where it was consuming me completely. So
a different type of consuming going on.
Yeah.
barbecuing is fantastic. My arteries have not necessarily held up the same way. The couch to 10K has taken a little bit of a backseat, it'd be fair to say, over the little break. But overall, it has been fun.
But so the contents of the book is probably not anything anybody needs to know about, unless you're interested in reverse searing. I can help you with that. But it is more about what it did for me and what that process of getting into that. I think if we are bogged down in I've got to always read or consume content that is going to make me a better coach, it's going to make me do this, it's going to make me do that, eventually you're going to either burn out or start to dislike things, or you'll probably start to get into a bit of a narrow focus. So, yeah, this has been a really good, I guess, journey that and I'm still on. And again, like I said, it taught me that, you know, I read that thing all the way through without any issue. Didn't fall asleep, didn't do any of that, just read it through. So I definitely need to find things that motivate me and ways to stay motivated in things that I need to read as well. So, yep. Yeah.
Episode one of Book Club is down. Congratulations, Zoe. You got there in the end. I don't know that we'll get an episode two out of you, but we'll see how we go. You know, maybe it could be promoting your new book, Zoe's Book Club, or something like that. And, you know, we might get a coach's page, like a coaches who queue or something
there you
like
go.
That. And we can start
hey,
sharing.
Yell some. Out. If you're a barbecuer, let us know.
Coaches who queue. Yeah. This could be a spin-off pod.
Here we go.
It's dangerous. I don't know that I've got all the soundboard. We'll just have like barbecue sauce all over it and those types of things. This may not be the best of ideas, but you know, we'll look at doing something potentially down the road. But it is actually a really valuable thing. And obviously you're in a bit of a unique situation in that your work life is also basketball, but your social life becomes basketball too. Mm. So just having that little bit of a disconnect, it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be different people, but it has to be a different focus, I think, which is an important part of everyone's lives, because you know, we all work, we're all involved with basketball, those types of things. Sometimes we can be just so dialed in on what we're doing that we kind of lose a little bit of track of what we need to be doing as well. And just when that break comes, and I'll be the first one to put my hand up, not a super patient person, It'd be fair to say.
Barbecuing with Rob is not fun.
No, it is not ideal. When it's like a 12-hour cook, it's like 12-hour cook, but I want it now. Like, it's, I feel like Homer with the flash frying the buffalo. But it's one of those areas too where I get frustrated when things don't work. Like, and that's, you know, clearly a bit of a, probably a deep-seated anxiety that I clearly possess and have to work through at some stage. But it is one of those areas too where I get really annoyed if it doesn't work out exactly how it's supposed to work out. But then we went and did a barbecue cooking class not too long ago and the guy spoke about it. Like, yeah, but this is a guide. Everything is a guide. You need to sort of deal with what's in front of you. That cut of meat will not be the same as that cut of meat. And then that epiphany moment happened. It's like, oh, it's like coaching. We can't always tell them to stand there because they can't stand there. There's defense there and we can't tell them they have to cut it this time because the defense isn't telling them to cut it this time. This is like coaching. Frustrating. No, I'm joking. But it's that kind of thing where you do have to find your little niches and what works for you and how it goes from there. So I do appreciate you jumping into that one. I know it wasn't an easy one for you.
Thanks.
We'll see how we go. Coops, you're on the clock. Next time you're on the pod, we'll throw a book recommendation at you. But I know you've got some lengthy stuff that is not necessarily food related.
Yeah. Maybe might be a little bit more intricate.
Which is quite okay too.
Yeah.
All about the diversity.
That's right. Exactly.
So, coaches, thank you very much for jumping in. We'll continue this chat next week on the podcast as well. So we'll grab the other two coaches in and we'll try and unpack the rest of it from there. But good luck with your coaching and thanks very much for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.